All right, I guess we got time for two more cycles of questions here before we go. The last one's kind of a little more open-ended for you guys, but this first one here, I'll start with you, John. I'm curious why you don't see more coaches really try to dictate to the other team as opposed to being dictated to. Some of the really daring ones, but it seems like they're the guys we know, you know, by name, like Mike Martz. It just seems to be such an exception to the rule. You also see the same thing in the NBA a little bit. The most radical instance of what I'm talking about, 2002 season, good old Botch Davis, worst coach in the history of the NFL. The Steelers get blown out by New England and Oakland running the spread on them. The Browns, with their four deuces, quote-unquote, the next week here, you would have thought would have come out trying to do the same thing. Butch Davis goes into a shell, says afterwards, well, I'm sure they would have been ready for us. I'm sure they would have made adjustments based on what happened to them the last 2 weeks. Now, that's the most radical example that I can name of somebody doing something like that, but you still see a lot of examples of that, of teams who are so scared of something like that. It has seemed to be like a radical thing the last couple of years with Rich Rodriguez in college here that, hey, maybe you can run out of these spread formations sometimes here. You know, you have less blockers, true, but you're dictating to the defense. The defense might be coming out in a nickel or a dime position, and it's easier to run on them in that way. It still seems to be such radical thinking, John, in terms of we're going to dictate to the other team instead of being dictated to. And I'd like to know why you think so many coaches still choose to just play it so safe.
Well, one is, you know, a lot of these guys don't have a lot of job security. And you kind of started this segment off talking about the NFL being a win-now league. And a lot of coaches in the National Football League are on a week-to-week, season-to-season at best basis. There's a few exceptions, and those are the guys you see taking more of the chances. What Sean Payton did in the Super Bowl with the onside kick, you know, to start the second half. Bill Belichick going for it on fourth down deep in his own territory is a prime example. The guys that know they have job security, that have the confidence to make a risky decision, a risk reward type decision, because they know they're not going to get fired if it backfires on them. Those are the guys you're going to see try different things and try new things. Now, as you know, kind of going back to that college to pro, and the Broncos are kind of going through a lot of that right now with Tim Tebow and the offense he ran in Florida, and you know, the spread, the pure spread offense as it's run in college, you know, by Rich Rodriguez and by Urban Meyer in Florida, it's a gimmick offense. It's not an offense that I believe wholeheartedly would work in the National Football League, because defenses in the NFL are much faster and much smarter than those in college, even in the SEC where a lot of the teams are good. You saw Alabama, a pro defense run by a pro football coach, you know, and Nick Saban, stop that offense. And in the National Football League, if a team decides we're going to run the pure spread and spread everybody out, you know, you may see a team has success against some of the lesser teams, but a Bill Belichick or, you know, those upper echelon defensive-minded coaches would find a way to stop that very quickly. And it might get you 20-20, but you wouldn't score consistently when you need, you know, to grind out yards in the red zone or in third and fourth, you know, in short yardage. So I really believe that it's not so much a question of, you know, dictate or be dictated to, more so that sometimes, you know, and you're seeing a little bit of it with this wildcat or wild horses, and you see all these different iterations. It looks great and during the regular season. It's a lot of fun, and people have fun with it. You know, Ronnie Brown running all over the place. Then you get to the playoffs, and Baltimore comes to Miami, and all of a sudden, Miami can't move the football, and they get blown out in their own stadium in the playoffs. Good defenses will stop gimmick football. So in the end, you still have to be able to run, to get short yardage, and to do things in the red zone, you know, without going 3, 4, 5 wide and spreading the ball all around. I mean, that's my point of view on it.
Okay, interesting answer. Challenging the premise. Good stuff there. Very, very thought-provoking. Jason, what are your thoughts on this whole matter of dictating versus being dictated to?
Rick, do you need a moment to collect yourself after the little Miami Ravens
comment there? Yeah. By the way, John, I'm a Browns fan, but my 1A team is the Dolphins, so you did dredge a terrible memory there. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jason.
No, I think what John's hitting on is just, it's just one of those things that when we sit back and sever – the tie between sports fan and presumed sports analyst. We try to come up with these answers. That is one of the answers that we try to, disavow and believe that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that everything could eventually come down to something like job security or the fact that it might not work. It may be fun and sexy now, but when it matters, is it going to do the job? Because in the root of things, and it stretches far beyond just coaching, but in the root of football specifically, it's a boring game as far as the stuff that wins. All the time you hear people say, especially GMs, that go that route, that we want to build from the inside out. We want to start in the trenches. Well, on draft day, when you've got a 38-year-old casual football fan who's watching his team all at the clock in the first round, he doesn't want to hear, Iupati or Mike Pouncey. He wants to hear Dez Bryant or C.J. Spiller. You know, that part of the game is not sexy. But if you want to win and do a good job and keep your job if you're the coach, sometimes you have to do those less exciting things.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes it's not always about the glamour side of it. Okay. Nate, your thoughts on that, dictating versus being dictated to?
Absolutely, Rick. First, I want to add that your number one hate team would probably be the Steelers. Your number two hate team in Cleveland has got to be the Ravens. So a double whammy for you on that event. But
yeah, and no offense to John, but going back to my childhood, the Broncos are up there as well. John Elway and whatnot.
Beautiful. You know, Rick, I think about football, and I love those chess match games. And I know you don't like them, but I love them. And I look at football like a chess match almost every time out, and you can't make a radical move in chess and leave your king exposed. Well, it's clearly a game of inches, and one or two mistakes in a football game, it's over. You might survive one turnover, you might survive one mistake. You make two mistakes in a football game, you're beat. The coaches have to approach it like chess. They have to counteract the other team's moves each time there's a move made. And they have to take the conservative route for that because you just can't take the chance of making that mistake and losing the football game because of one or two mistakes, 1 or 2 inches, and so many times an NFL football game comes down to that. And that's why the odds makers, for could never beat the NFL because it's just too close to call every single time. And that's what makes it so great is the chess match mentality of a football game.
Well, and it's funny. I mean, I love the chess match, too. You and I maybe kind of differ maybe semantically on what that is. I've said that I hate, like, the 13-9, field position type, 15 punts in a game kind of a thing. I'm not saying I don't like 49-42. I don't like no defense either. But I like moderate to high scoring. You've said you're more comfortable with that kind of game. Different strokes for different folks, I suppose, here. All right, bringing it around to the final question here. We're running slightly behind, but I'm just letting this segment breathe because it's so damn good the way that we're going here. I wish we had another hour for this. But here's what I want to put out there for you guys. I'll start with you, John. We've seen a decade. We talked about a few of these things here a little bit. Some interesting innovations. The spread, the Wildcat coming into parlance. The Cover 2 really got to be a big thing here with what Dungy started to do in Tampa Bay, Dungy, Kiffin, et cetera, and the way that it's kind of spread through the league here. We've seen some really interest. For those of us that are connoisseurs of X's and O's, we've really seen some interesting developments over the last decade. Start with you, John. Off the top of your head, what do you think some of the biggies are looking at the next 10 years here as far as developments to come into play?
Well, that's, again, I always look at football games, like I said before, it's a cyclical type, the 3-4, was huge in the 70s, the Steelers and the Broncos, the Orange Crush was a 3-4 defense, and then it kind of went away, and you saw the 4-6 come around, and some other, specialty type defenses, and specialty type offenses, and you saw the run and shoot, and then, football kind of got back to its roots a little bit with the running game, and then Barry Sanders and some other guys. And then it's now a complete quarterback league. And if you don't have Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or now Drew Brees, then you're really, under the gun. So I really, when you look at the NFL, it's the ultimate copycat league. And the latest trend is going to be whatever the team that's winning football games is doing. So you're going to have teams looking at the Colts, and they're looking at the Saints now, and what they're, you know, what are they doing? So everybody's going to probably go sign an aging safety like Darren Sharper that can, you know, return a bunch of interceptions for touchdowns and lead you to a Super Bowl. So, you know, I don't think there's going to be any new type of trend, because I don't think that's what the NFL in the NFL, college football completely different, but in the NFL, what really wins, and I think, you know, Jason kind of touched on this, what really wins is that same hard-nosed, you know, smash-mouth type mentality. Why the Steelers, again, here in Cleveland, bringing up a sore subject, but the Steelers have been so consistent for 40 years because they do the same thing every year, and very rarely have they gotten away from that. And that smash-mouth, we're going to run the ball down your throat, we're going to play tough, you know, tough nails defense, you know, we're going to make things hard on you on defense, and we're going to run the ball down your throat on offense. Here it comes. Stop it. And more often than not, teams can't, because they try and get, you know, cute and fancy and flashy and try and do it a different way. Well, sometimes the old way is the best way, and I think that's what we've seen in the NFL.
Well, good stuff, good stuff. I'm a student of history in sports and outside of sports as well. I love the whole thing of, you know, there's nothing new. It's all just stuff that's been replicated from before. That's really what the Wildcat is. The Wildcat's not new. The Wildcat is ancient and dusted off and presented in 21st century form. Great answer there, John, when you're talking about what to look for in a macro sense, things being recycled from before. Jason, try and follow that, buddy.
Yeah, I have to say, I agree with everything there. But I got to say also that a part of me is searching for something. And I don't know that I've seen it yet, and I don't know that I ever will. But in the discussion of the 3-4 defense and its popularity, and assuming that it continues to grow and other teams eventually transition over, thinking that the grass is always greener, I want to see what I can only describe as a hybrid 3-4. Or a hybrid defense, where we've accepted the fact that, you know, lighter defensive ends that are quick, fast, and can shed blocks make great outside linebackers. Well, if that's true, then why have we not seen someone take advantage of the idea that a 3-4 defensive end is generally not going to get sacks, and their job really is no more than to eat up blockers, push the pocket back, and create lanes for the linebackers? So in that regard, I want to see a 3-4 defense where you have a nose tackle, sure, in the 330 to 340 range. But I also want to see the, quote, defensive ends be 4-3 defensive tackles who know what their job is, and their job is not to go wide and use swim moves, but instead to smash that pocket back in the quarterback's face, thus creating lanes for linebackers and blitzing safeties, to the point that it seems feasible to me that if you can do that, if you can eat up the entire offensive line, including tight ends, with three guys, four at the most, there's no reason that I don't think that you can't blitz on every play while still covering everyone on every play to some degree. Do I think it's logical that it'll actually happen? Absolutely not, because we come back to football games are won in the trenches, and everything that is not traditional smash-mouth football is more or less just regurgitated, repackaged versions of old things that have failed in the past. So I don't think I'll see it, but I sure as hell would love to.
Oh, snap. I challenged you to follow that, and you did. Good one. Good answers there. Nate, tee it up, buddy. What do you think? Look into the crystal ball, and what do you think schematically the league's got to offer?
No, well, I think John just hit the nail on the head. I mean, think about what happens every year in pro football, Rick. You know, the teams that make the Final Four or so, their systems all get raided every year. You know, some the bottom feeders get let go, and the teams that make it a long way, their coordinators and assistants get raided and become head coaches, and it's cyclical every single year. Whatever works for the top teams, the next year the other teams are implementing that because they've raided the coaching staff, they've raided the style. So I'm not sure how far you can really look ahead, Rick, because it seems like, you know, it's going to be a consistent one-year-at-a-time change where you start taking these coordinators, offensive and defensive, and put them on other teams, and then another team rises to the top, and then their people get merged back into the bottom, and that's just the way that the NFL works. So, I sit here and I think, well, I don't know what's coming next, because what works next year will be what's implemented the year after. What works the year after will be implemented the year after that. So it's kind of a one-year-at-a-time thing as far as I see it.
Good call. Because, yeah, I mean, the Wildcat came in like mid-08, and, you know, before you knew it, everybody was scrambling, looking for a version of it. The FDH Top 50 Pro Wrestlers of All Time, we're going to break down our list. By the way, for anybody wondering about the Grammy-esque wardrobe change here, for those damn hipsters afterwards here, I am going to don some hipster apparel. I've already started for when Kyle pronounces me guilty of being a hipster on things. But
which will be during this list, I think.
Well, we're
although this list is decidedly anti-hipster,
we're going to hit all we unfortunately. I knew this was going to happen. All we're going to have time to do is hit broad strokes on this list. So what I'm going to do is we'll go through on this the ones that jump out at the most. We'll go through here. And again, I was starting to read this prior to when Bret Hart called in. I wasn't sure when he was going to get here. But all this is drawing money, period. This is just about how successful you were, primarily as a main eventer. Some guys were able to make a huge impact as a special attraction, and they're on the list pretty high as well. But main eventing, helping to carry territories, and then later on major promotions. A tie for 50th on the list, because I'm very gutless and I didn't want to leave any of these guys out, and I also didn't want to do a honorable mention. Tied for 50th, Chris Jericho, these are alphabetical, Chris Jericho, Rey Mysterio Jr., George the Animal Steel, Pat O'Connor, Randy Orton, and Batista.
So it should be the top 58 then. You're just lazy. You didn't want to rank them.
Technically, it's a tie.
What that is, it's basically the token spot for the new guy who we haven't enough time to differentiate between them. And by the way, that's with one exception. George Steele has no business here.
George Steele was a heck of a special attraction. I'm not just homering for him because he's been on the show.
As the little guy who I used to know would be able to tell you, I hate George Steele.
In the 60s and 70s, he was the bomb. Come on.
I always wanted to see him as like, all I think I remember is 80s George the Animal
once again, the little guy will tell you that feud he had with Randy Savage was so great.
No, I thought that was terrible.
I hated it. It
was awful.
To me, if there was an internet back in 1986, that feud would have been so lampooned.
End this.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you thought, that was the biggest waste of Randy Savage ever.
Jericho, Mysterio, Orton, and Batista. Jericho, theoretically. They all still have time ahead of them. Batista theoretically. You don't think so?
No.
All right. Well, Batista's
as old as it is.
I don't see Batista. Batista has, well, all four of those guys have hit their peak.
Yeah. Okay.
Orton hasn't hit his. He might be in it now.
I'll tell you what, but Randy Orton, here's the interesting thing with Randy Orton's career arc. His arc was 04 and they screwed it up.
Yeah, I know.
Regardless of how he's perceived now and that they protect him a lot better
but
now
he
than
was
they did
red
back then.
Hot 08, 09 going into 10.
I thought he was overrated.
Got to look, it's a completely different era watching now than it was back then. Whole kid youth movement and all those people, it's completely different.
This is pretty much what I was afraid of. We're not going to be able to do justice to all of this.
My opinion on that one, it should be Jericho.
Yeah.
He's drawn everywhere he's gone.
49 Edge. We thought going into last night he'd have room to move up on the list. He hasn't. Let me get through the fourth tier. This is the fourth tier on us, and then we can talk about the names after that. 48, Ricky Steamboat. 47, Kevin Nash. 46, Junkyard Dog, an unmatched run in the Mid-South early 80s. 45, Sergeant Slaughter. 44, Pedro Morales. 43, Johnny Valentine. 42, Abdullah the Butcher. 41, Gorilla Monsoon, referenced earlier tonight. 40, Gene Kaniski. 39, Ray Stevens. 38, Bobo Brazil. I was questioned on Bobo Brazil by a friend of one of our dignitaries, Ken Detweiler, on Facebook. And I said, in the age of segregation, he didn't get a chance to do more than he did. He might have been the Jackie Robinson of wrestling, but didn't get a chance to carry much of a major territory.
What's interesting, I've reviewed the list in totality, that there are some guys, you know, no one in the top three tiers, which we haven't talked about, didn't deserve to be on the list.
Okay.
So everyone there, this is the grouping, and obviously it's natural because it's the bottom tier, where there's some guys I'm like, really? And I would have to see like a gigantic list. It's just hard for me when you're looking at all these names. You're like, okay, that guy's pretty good, but there's got to be someone better. Kevin Nash, to me, didn't deserve to be on this list. I don't think. What did he do? Yeah, he was involved in one of those famous angles ever, but
I think
was a low drawing WWF champion, and he wrote the coattails of other people in WCW.
But I see him
booked it horribly.
I see him as the number two draw of the NWO, which was one of the biggest things ever.
Yeah, but you know what? In retrospect, I mean, Hogan was that was really. I mean, it's really interesting.
Hogan, Nash, Hall. I had that.
It's a huge. Yeah, but 2 and 3 are real close.
Okay,
and 1 and 2 are not.
Well, Hall never really main evented in WCW much. Not that Nash set the world on fire.
Yeah,
when he did.
But you're right. You're right. That's true. But there was a lot of personal problems by that point. Okay. I mean, I saw him as equals basically until '98. Hall and Nash. Hogan, yeah. When he came in, man. I mean, Hall and Nash were red hot when they came into the company. Hogan comes in, and I mean, the pecking order clearly
changed. They became the Yankees real quick.
Is there anybody else who you thought maybe didn't deserve to be on the list from that group?
You know, JYD, obviously, because based on the strength of Mid-South. He deserves to be in, because without that, he's just your standard 80s babyface that doesn't make it.
No.
I hate Pedro Morales, personally. Yeah, he never did anything to me, but I just don't like
him. For 2 years, though.
In
New York.
You know,
I mean.
Yeah, but there's another guy who's way higher on the list that was a champ for an even longer time, which I don't know to this day what pictures he had of somebody.
Okay.
To get those. So, you know, him and you know, there's a lot of guys on here compared to where you go up, like I said.
Okay.
The big difference between Tier 3 and Tier 4 is I could probably do, except Bobo Brazil, who definitely deserves to be on this list, I could probably debate anyone else being on this list.
Wow.
Eddie Guerrero, by the way, I was shocked I didn't see him on this list.
I thought about it, but he just, part of it was when he died, I thought that he just didn't get enough. Had he lived, I feel like he was on par to have been in there. And by the way, too, although he was my favorite wrestler and now a hated wrestler of mine because of everything else, Chris Benoit, I bumped for legitimate reasons, again, cut short by his own hand, as it were, but had he and Eddie gone further, I think they'd have definitely been on the list.
They were darlings, but at the same time, they weren't really top draws other than like the 2004. Like,
and
that
I
was
know
only
this,
6 months in 2004.
Eddie headlined more than Benoit, but still, not that
much.
And
I know this is a draw-heavy thing,
right.
But I'm saying even if Benoit hadn't done what he'd done, which obviously clouds any kind of ranking. You know, Ricky,
right.
I talked about that list that was up on the blog when I talked about WrestleMania 20, that it's very hard to watch the end of that show.
Yeah, try to be in there.
Yeah, but I don't know if Benoit's on it, even if he didn't do what he did.
All right, third tier. I'll just go in order on these, moving our way up. 37, Jack Briscoe. 36, Danny Hodge. 35, Superstar Billy Graham. 34, Frank Gotch. 33, Terry Funk. 32, Ted DiBiase. 31, Mick Foley. 30, Ed the Strangler Lewis. 29, Dory Funk Jr. 28, Kurt Angle. 27, Bob Backlund. 26, Goldberg. 25, Sting. 24, Fred Blassie, have at it.
All right, one of them I'm going to argue the fact Superstar Billy Graham is majorly robbed on a couple of reasons. That's way too low in my opinion. If it was Superstar Billy Graham, he drew in New York. He drew his matches up there. He was a multiple-time champion in the time era, I believe it was post-Bruno.
10 or 11 months, though.
Okay. Yeah, he had the one reign he beat Bruno.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, however, he influenced so many other. I mean, I understand the your main draw is
right,
but without him, you wouldn't have had Hulk Hogan. You wouldn't have had our guest from earlier tonight, Jesse Ventura. You wouldn't have had a Big Papa Pump, Scott
By criteria,
Steiner.
Other
you wouldn't have had a lot of the. I mean, it's. That's why we were talking on the phone. Mm-hmm. You can't have like just a flat scoreboard because I mean, what if you take Superstar Billy Graham and you put him into the Hulk Hogan spot, who I felt had 10 times more charisma than Hulk Hogan?
See, I disagree. Superstar Billy Graham, the best thing that happened to his career was that Hulk Hogan stole his shtick and did better with it, because it's like the hipster with rock and roll. who, you know, there's the popular band, and I should be able to think of an example. I was trying so hard while you were talking and I'm drawing a blank. But you know, there's like the popular band, and
if there's somebody that did Nirvana shtick better,
like it's like, oh, well, you should have listened to the Pixies all the time. You know, that's so much better.
Yep.
It's like, you know, the Pixies are really good, but they're not better than Nirvana. Okay,
right.
You know, that's what it is to me.
The Foo Fighters are, but not.
That's
the
a great, great comparison.
I know
by the
it
way.
Was. I made it. But Superstar Billy Graham, I thought he was accurately right. This was obviously a very old school tier.
Yeah.
With the exception of Angle, who, you know, it's kind of funny because looking back 5 years ago, you're like, man, this is low, because he seemed like he was shot for the moon. And I think it just speaks to how absolutely hideous TNA is.
Yeah.
That now it seems like he's too high.
That's sad, but I almost agree
Mick
with you.
Mick Foley, I thought, was too low. And then part of it, it's clouded. I like Mick Foley a lot. Sting and Goldberg, I'll be honest, this was they were really like outliers on this list, because you had a lot of old school NWA champions on this list. I think both of them were too high. Goldberg is so hard to rank because, to use a sports comparison, it's like ranking that single season great team against a dynasty where
right.
it's so hard.
Yeah.
He was out of this world in 98. But other than that one run, what did he do?
He did
nothing.
But in that one run, he was as hot. He was one of the hottest performers in the industry and became a worldwide recognized celebrity to the point where he still have gigs and people still to this day, they know who Goldberg is. However,
right.
at the same time, he was right place, right time because he was never a good wrestler.
Yeah, but
and right. he, being the drawing criteria, yeah, he drew, but I mean, I guess near the end of it, he was. But even in that, he didn't draw on his whole entire streak. Those
right.
entire streaks weren't based entirely around him.
Right.
He had such a cast of characters that were surrounding Goldberg.
They were very deep.
People remember when he was the world champion.
Right.
He was wrestling in mid-card matches as
right.
the world champion.
He was very the easiest guy. I always compare Goldberg's career to that of the Ultimate Warrior. He
yeah.
did better than
yes.
the Ultimate Warrior in
right.
that it was a no-brainer to make him the champion. They made him the champion, and he was booked so horribly, and he, it was
right.
also not only the promotion's fault, but a little bit of his because it's
right.
a one-dimensional character. Sting, to me, more overrated than Goldberg. Sting always seemed like a no-brainer. Always fail in the top spot.
Right.
Always fail in the top spot. That said, he's very popular.
We're a little behind on this. Let me just ask, have we gotten to any of the ones majorly disputed yet? I don't think so.
The only one that I think seems way underrated is
okay.
Gotch.
Okay.
And I know that's
yeah.
really old school. Gotch, to me, I just actually watched the history of the World Championship TV.
Okay.
And Mike Campbell, you know, that weird guy who's on a lot of these documentaries, he had Gotch in his top five.
Oh,
which
wow.
which
okay.
is way too high.
Interesting.
Which is way too high.
Well, there's another super old school guy. We'll hear him on the next tier. This is tier two of the top 50 pro wrestlers of all time. 23, Jerry the King Lawler. 22, the man he faced at SummerSlam 93. Our guest earlier tonight, the man you'll hear at the top of the hour, Bret the Hitman Hart. 21, Nature Boy Buddy Rogers. 20, John Cena. 19, Shawn Michaels. 18, Nick Bockwinkel, one of my personal favorites. 17, Triple H. 16, Harley Race. 15, Jim Londos. There's your old school. 24, Antonino Roca. There's a little more newer old school compared to Jim Londos. 13, Macho Man Randy Savage. 12, Gorgeous George. No, not Randy Savage's valet, the original one. 11, The Undertaker. 10, Roddy Piper. And 9, Andre the Giant. That's our second tier of the top draws.
All right, this number... First things first, I would have had the first tier be mm-hmm. smaller than you had it. I only had it. You and I, coincidentally,
okay.
although it wasn't in the same order, had the same top six.
Really?
I blindly looked.
Okay.
Before, when you told me you were going to do this and have me, before I even looked at your list, I wrote a quick top 10 down, and we had the same top six. And,
okay.
But that's where I cut the list. To me,
okay.
there was a significant drop. I think you've got a lot of the right wrestlers in this second tier. You know, there are a lot of guys who I could argue, yeah, he should maybe be three spots lower, three spots higher when I looked at your list and,
mm-hmm.
and started doing it. I think Bret Hart, you jobbed him, man. 22? I had him I think he's borderline top 10.
I actually don't think you jobbed him, to be honest with you.
How do I say this about somebody who was nice enough to be on the show and who's on at the top of the hour, but
internationally,
again, if I'm going by draw and what he did on
there.
Top in New York. I mean, I'm qualifying this, but again, I had him where he was at on the list, and what was it, number 19? Or 22, rather. I had him there because he is on that second tier. I think most people would agree, second tier of top draws of all time. We obviously quibble with where it would be on the second tier, but just in looking at it in dollars and cents and everything, and by the way, too, I'm not comparing it to I'm not going to compare anybody to the injustices of Bobo Brazil because a lot of that was racially indicated, things that happened to him. But Bret Hart also suffered from bad booking. Let's not forget that. We've talked about this. They catapulted him from mid-card to world champion overnight. He lost to Yokozuna in that horrible WrestleMania 9 thing here. So, but this is scoreboard. This is you may have had a lot of things done to you. But scoreboard at the end of the day, and the guy had a stroke which cut him short. Well, and before that, he had the bad concussion. So in the final analysis, that's where I came down.
One of the things I also had a comment on there, Jerry Lawler's ranking,
yeah.
Thank God for Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
That's
in
true.
One town, or one area down. I mean, in the
he traveled
the
a little
area,
bit in the South and the AWA and Texas, but no, you're basically
Lawler,
right.
I mean, other than Tennessee, he
right.
never really drew out.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't a big draw when his WWE run.
Right.
Lawler didn't draw. Anyway, I think
right.
he's too high, personally.
Right. Okay.
No, I think he's right. I think he's right because, you know what, you can't put, because he was so, no one is more popular in any one town than he is in Memphis, Tennessee.
Right.
But at the same, which carries him to a certain level, but it also there's a ceiling on that shtick. And he also, by the time he got to WWE, he was old. I mean, his best days were behind him. This is such an interesting tier because it's guys from different eras,
yeah.
Whereas, you know, that third tier was such old school guys. With Cena and Triple H, who I would imagine some people would actually probably have a problem with being this high, I don't. I see Bret Hart should be above John Cena. Because Bret Hart was back in the era when if you were the champion, you know what, it mattered. Maybe Bret, it was more sink or swim as the champion. Cena has the benefit of the company is the draw now.
I
don't have a problem with him being as high as he is. Same with Triple H. Triple H actually think should be a little higher.
Here's why Cena's higher on my list than Bret Hart. It seems hard to believe, and largely because only three of these have come in the last match at WrestleMania. John Cena is the only man ever, and granted, we're in the brand split era with two world titles. He's been in seven consecutive WrestleMania world title matches. We may never see anybody do that ever
again. Big? I mean, has John Cena...
Yeah, but on your topic, have they felt that big? Look at the crowd. He's got a sold-out crowd.
Yeah,
he's drawing scoreboard.
Again, we're going back to the scoreboard. That's the wrong use.
Did Bret really draw proportionally strongly his crowd? Are you giving him credit for all? I mean, I'm just asking.
I'm saying, like, how many WrestleMania to me draws on the name, not John Cena?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Bret Hart.
Absolutely correct.
You know what? WrestleMania, yeah, okay, it was an arena show
back in
Bret Hart's day.
Where you're positioned going into WrestleMania says a lot, though. And John Cena, 7 years in a row, has been in a world title
match.
Bret
was almost
always
on top. He's
been in a title match. He's never not been in one.
He was in a throwaway in 95. Again, bad booking.
I was talking about
in 95.
But 9, he was on top. 10, he was on top. 12, he was on top. And 13
might as well.
He wasn't the champion, but he was on top.
All right. Well, I got to get to the top
and Michael
tier.
Should have been higher.
I got to get
too.
To the top. If Bret's listening, he's going to light me up at the top of the hour here after you guys set me up like that. But no disrespect, Bret. I'm just giving
I'll
my
get
honest
on this bad
opinion.
Somebody saying Shawn Michaels should have been higher. I had him at 9, one spot above Bret.
Oh, all right. Okay. All right. Well, here's the top.
And I couldn't. And Andre and Undertaker should have been higher too.
Here's the top tier. Our top 50, and these are basically on draws. Number 8, Vern Gagne in the AWA, on top pretty much forever, drawing there. Number 7, Dusty Rhodes. And then here comes the 6 we agreed on in whatever order, Kyle. Number 6, The Rock. Number 5, Bruno Sammartino. Number 4, Lou Thesz. 3, Ric Flair. Woo! Steve Austin, 2. Hulk Hogan, 1.
Okay, my question on this was The Rock.
Yeah.
Up until his comeback, The Rock, I mean, he's had such a sporadic run, and I still firmly believe like that The Rock was kind of on the coattails. He kind of jumped onto the Steve Austin bandwagon that drew him in. He kept him there, don't get me wrong. And he went on to
do... He was hotter than Austin for a good chunk there.
But it wasn't – he kept an audience that he didn't draw in originally. He kept them, which is good, which –
It's also why Steve Austin's higher, though.
Yeah, so, I understand that. It's just like – sometimes I think a lot of people put The Rock – like they glorify him more than his – because he had a good – he had a great run. Don't get me wrong. I just don't necessarily know that I would put him that high up.
He is like the James Dean who lived, you know, because he's still alive.
Yeah,
but, you know.
I know. But he's still – I guess now and he's still drawn again.
Yeah,
so,
he is.
I mean
– All right. First things first, and here's where the problem comes in that I spoke. Dusty Rhodes and Vern Gagne have no business being associated in the same group with the other 6 guys.
Huge.
Vern Gagne is the most overrated guy, I think.
Huge
on the
draw.
List.
Huge draw.
Yeah, because but he was the booker.
He owned, you know, I mean.
He was over, though. You don't run a territory like that for 20-plus years on top
to
if
me,
you're not
when
over
I think
like
Vern
over.
Gagne, though, I don't think a lot of the guys we
and
talked
in
about
the 50s,
in that second
by the
tier,
way. Go back and look at your history of the Dumont in the 50s. He
no,
was
I remember.
Huge there. Yeah,
he was, I'm not saying
denying
he was a nobody.
That. I just don't think
he was a top 20 guy, but I think he should have been about 10 spots. There were a lot of guys.
Really?
Guys like Undertaker. Andre the Giant. I'd have Triple H higher than
Undertaker's. Undertaker's an interesting
wow.
one because under we mentioned the strength of WrestleMania, and right now I am of the belief you mentioned the name, but the name now of WrestleMania that draws is the Undertaker. Right now, it is the Undertaker that
he's
is the
number
big,
one draw
he's the
at
number,
WrestleMania
for the past at least five to 6 years almost. It has been the streak. That is what the main match that is sold on is the streak.
Agreed.
And right now, when you're going to WrestleMania, the first thing every fan thinks of, even if they don't watch wrestling anymore, is who's the Undertaker? Is he still undefeated? Yeah.
But
now, oh man, I wonder who he's facing.
Now more than ever, he's a special attraction as opposed to being
which
a guy
who's
there year-round.
Which is also
on
your list of, I mean,
yeah, but special
but he
attraction.
He evolved into a special attraction.
I always
you know what
it was. We talked
apples
about
to apples, dust to dust. He started his career as a special attraction and became a main eventer.
There you go. In the wake of Andre Leeded, I had Andre at 7 and Undertaker at 8 on my list. Now, the top 6 I mentioned to you, I had the same.
Okay.
I actually would disagree with what he said about The Rock. I had The Rock at 3. And
I had a flair. Okay.
Yes.
Well, if we include it's like what he went on to go do,
well,
I mean,
because,
I guess.
And that kind of matters to me.
It does.
There are 3 guys.
Okay.
All right, here, 6 through 4, I had San Martino, Fez, and Flair. Those guys were great at their craft. They were great. They were the prototypical what you want as the old school NWA champion.
Right.
Drew a lot of money in their different San Martino and WWE.
When was San Martino the NWA champion?
You know what I'm
champion.
Saying? Don't you get semantics with me, pal.
I'm just saying. I missed that run.
Damn hipsters. Okay, anyway.
We got to get to that in a second. We desperately got to get to that in a second. So
let's
wrap
thing,
here.
And here, and you know me and Hogan, but he definitely deserves to be number one, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I had Hogan 1, Austin 2, Rock 3. Those three transcended the business, did things beyond what the other three did.
Okay.
And here's the thing with Hogan. Whether you like that era or you don't, that era, 84 to 89, was all Hulk Hogan.
Right.
If he wasn't there, no one really cared about the show. If he was there, it was the biggest thing ever. Austin and Rock, you know, Austin was better. Austin, because he came first, and Rock, I don't, the coattails is a little harsh, but here's the thing. When Austin was injured for that year, the WWE did not see its business decrease. It actually kind of went up.
It actually increased
in
2000.
Increased, when The Rock was the man. So that's why, to me, the top three has to be Hogan, Austin, Rock. And then I go with the three, you know, Flair, you know, Fez, San Martino.
All right.
I almost left when McDonald's won Best Chain Restaurant. I'm almost done.
As it just did. But we're getting
look, damn.
Where are we? Johnny. Oh, and definitely in America.
Yeah, Johnny is a little befuddled by that. John is befuddled. Yeah, your vote of Aladdin's, your elitist vote of Aladdin's.
Absolutely.
You know, Johnny's the kind of guy who tends to loathe the entire concept of chain restaurants. So
indeed.
You know.
Indeed.
Is there a place in Tremont that only serves tapas?
Oh, absolutely. The rest of the world calls them appetizers.
Yeah, we call them tapas. Well, along the lines of the exotic here, how's that for a transition? How's that for a segue? Yeah. Morris pulling out the segue again. Underpublicized vacation spot. In this segment, we're doing underpublicized vacation spot and album. This one, the winner of underpublicized vacation spot got 2 votes. So we always blow through the ones with 1. This is everything except the winning category. We start with, and once again, showing you the full range and breadth of the FDH Academy of Arts and Sciences.
So.
Well, there were a handful of people that didn't vote. There were 3 people that didn't vote, so this is 27 total. But, this is all over the place. We start with Jekyll Island, Georgia. We move from there to the South Jersey beaches, a place called Cinqueterre, Cinqueterre. 1 for Yellowstone National Park. 1 for Maine, 1 for, and this has kind of gotten giggles when I've talked about this with people before, Milwaukee in the summer. It was stipulated in the summer.
Okay.
So 1 for that, yes. 1 for Carter Caves.
In the winter, it sucks.
Yeah. 1 for Carter Caves, Kentucky. 1 for Toronto. 1 for Iceland. 1 for Queenstown, New Zealand. A little fancy for this category, but you ain't heard anything yet. 1 for Adirondacks, New York. 1 for Mobile, Alabama. And here's the one. With all due respect to our friend Ben Chu from the 21st Century Media Alliance, OutsideTheBoxScoreBlog.com. Ben, by definition, you cannot be underpublicized if you've hosted a freaking Summer Olympics. 1 vote for Barcelona, Spain.
What?
1 vote for Barcelona.
Ben Chu, I love you, but dude,
is that
seriously,
by any measure that anybody can think of underpublicized?
That's highly publicized.
Ben, sorry, dude.
Yeah. It had a freaking Olympics. 1 vote for Calypso Island Cruises. 1 vote for Turkey. 1 vote for, as we discussed, Anthony saying North Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Well, that's a great place. And I'll say this really quick, simply because what I mean is just like 2 minutes to 5 minutes north of the boardwalk, there's only a few hotels there. It's an empty beach. It's a beautiful, nice place. If you just want to go without the crowd,
you can take your kids there, and you don't have to keep an eye. Well, you got to keep an eye on your kids, obviously, but
you don't have to search for your kids if they tend to wander off because there's not millions of people there. Your kid can go out into the water and you can still see him and not have to fight.
You can
to
look
see
down and look back up
kids.
And go, oh, look, there's my kid over there.
Yeah.
So that was a vote there. The other Patron brother, Matt Patron.
The best vote ever.
Taking the, one might say, the Simple Pleasures vote in bed. It was your vote. You know, so.
Hey, one way
does that
or the
include
other,
a
man,
fortune
there's things,
cookie?
There's two things you can do in bed. So, if you got to ask, they're both the best.
Yeah.
Although, on a serious note, I did choose a joke for that one because I kind of figured it was going to be highly unlikely for there to be an actual winner of this. And Ricky says there is one. And I just figured, well, I'll just throw that one in there. But with all of the ones, the votes for ones, and I knew that's what it was going to be. On another note, I'll say Tybee Island in Georgia.
Okay.
It's a great place. I never actually stayed there. I visited there when I was staying in Hilton Head. I liked Hilton Head. It was expensive, though, and there was really nothing to do. But when you got in Tybee Island, you had Savannah, Georgia right next to it. You had the lighthouse, you had the beach, everything would just seem so peaceful out there. You could watch out and see the dolphins.
Johnny loves Savannah. That was his vote, actually.
That was my vote.
Yeah.
Largest St. Patrick's Day parade in the country.
Interesting.
Savannah was a great place. I really liked it. There was
very
a lot
cool
to do there. Mm-hmm.
And unlike the one in New York City, probably nobody marching in assless chaps in it, so it's got that going for it.
Yeah, nothing crotchless there.
Yeah.
Yes.
One vote for Frankenmuth, Michigan. One vote for Estes Park, Colorado. One vote for Tom Denk had voted for the U.S. National Park System. Bob, you voted for Northern Wisconsin.
Place in the winter. Near and dear to my heart. But as I was going to say, Anthony, my experience from spending a number of years there in my teens was also in the summertime, although I do have a good friend who goes cross-country skiing there in the winter. Not my sport of choice, but... if I would have said Minocqua, Woodruff, Rhinelander, probably wouldn't mean too much. Probably about 4 hours north of Milwaukee. Temperate nights, beautiful lakes, and woman without morals.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
The last one's
see,
the
there's
most
the
important.
Bed. There's yeah. the bed. You need the bed for some of this.
You're right, Matt.
cross-country skiing, that strikes me. Isn't that their mode of mail delivery in the winter?
See my dog sleds?
Yeah.
Is that where they get the Olympians for cross country skiing?
Yeah.
The mailmen from Wisconsin.
We got one vote for Ocean City, Maryland. One vote for, and this is of a regional thing that those of us in Ohio can appreciate, one vote for South Bass Island / Put-in Bay. My brother, Mike Morris, a member of the FDH Academy of Arts and Sciences, who used to live in Ohio, obviously, voted for that one. One vote for Charlotte, North Carolina. And now we get to the winner, the only one that got two votes, myself and fellow Academy member Bob Benick, casting votes for Ogle Bay Resort, Wheeling, West Virginia. Nice
did
little
you go
place
together?
There. We did not. We did not.
Holding hands, skipping through
the meadow. We did not. We have. I should stipulate.
They wore their assless chaps there.
See, everything ties together in the FDH lounge.
And a coonskin cap.
Everything.
So you're
comes,
all set.
Yeah. I did actually buy a coonskin cap in Wheeling, West Virginia one time, but that's an unrelated story. That was a trip that actually did not involve Ogle Bay. But it's a great place to go. I've never been there in the winter for the Festival of Lights that they have over the holidays, but you got that. You got golf there. You got the paddle boats. And if you're staying there at the lodge, free omelet breakfast there. You got an omelet chef, you know, for your breakfast. I think the putt-putt's free,
so you're
as
saying,
well as some nice golf courses.
So you're saying in the summer, not in the winter.
No, but they have the Festival
yeah,
of Lights.
Yeah, put that little quote down. I know some of my parents have been there for Christmas. They got some
more
lights, and it is great.
Lights in the winter.
I've heard it is great with the Festival of Lights down there. And I've seen video on it on TV and stuff and what they do for Christmas stuff down there and their ornaments. And it's from my... This looks great, and I'd love to get down there for the Festival of Lights for that. And,
yeah. Yeah, I've never been there for that part. I've wanted to go for it, haven't been there for that, but I've enjoyed it other times I've been there, and Bob Benek just happened to be the one other person who agreed with me, and that was all it took.
But,
so,
but the way you were putting it is, it sounded like you were putting the air quotes with it in the summer on it with the paddle boats.
Well,
and
I was not. Well, that's when I've, that's the only times I've been there.
See, the other the other thing that I would say that wasn't mentioned, and I guess it's only because it's only two weekends a year, would be Farmer Bob's Campground. It's in Bristol, Tennessee.
Okay.
That's fun.
They've got anything you could possibly think of down there.
Okay.
From a bake shop to a little grocery store to bands to Skank Alley. So it's all there, you know.
From a bake shop to a baked shop?
Yes. Literally.
Yeah.
And then there's a racetrack across the street.
So. Yeah.
And there's the fastest half mile in NASCAR right across the street.
There you go. Well, all these other ones were mere pretenders. Next to Ogle Bay Resort, we raised the Dundee Award.
Mere pretenders and a 2-1 vote.
In a landslide.
2-1.
In a landslide, we induct the Ogle Bay Resorts into the FDH Lounge Pantheon. A veritable landslide.
Unfortunately, there was a kind of, if I would have actually casted my vote, there would have been a tie. Because I did say Tybee Island is kind of Savannah. But it would have been a tie.
Well, where's Jekyll Island in relation to that? Is that close?
Well,
Russ Cohen voted for that. I've never heard
south,
of it.
South, I believe.
Upon arguing sure with himself over a number of these categories, Ricky is not going to let you change your vote.
Did you climb them big steps in between them buildings down there? They had the one, you go down the main strip in Savannah?
Yeah, and then you could go down by the river you're talking
down
about?
By the river. Yeah. And when you climb up the hill in between two of those buildings, their steps are like 3 or 4 foot tall.
Yeah.
We had to climb them just for the hell of it.
Oh, yeah. They've done a really nice job in that city of keeping the restoration of some of the older buildings, too. Yeah.
Really nice job in the restoration down there.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.